Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Emilio San Pedro, and in the early hours of Saturday, the 3rd of August, these are our main stories. President Trump's nominee to be head of U.S. intelligence, John Ratcliffe, has withdrawn from consideration after facing questions about his lack of experience. Officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo say only about half of Ebola cases in the current outbreak are being identified. And the head of Brazil's Space Research Institute has lost his job after a row with the president over the scale of deforestation in the Amazon. Also in this podcast, a Swedish judge has ordered the U.S. rapper A$AP Rocky to be freed from custody pending the verdict in his trial on assault charges. And
the attractiveness of a blood test, which could be made very available and accessible, and we know is actually quite acceptable to people as well, is a real step forward.
Scientists say using a blood test could diagnose Alzheimer's years before symptoms appear. That's all coming up. But first, the U.S. President Donald Trump has withdrawn his choice for Director of National Intelligence amid criticism that the Texas Congressman John Ratcliffe was underqualified and had been accused of padding his CV. Mr. Trump said his nominee had been treated unfairly by the media.
I was reading the press, and I could see that the press was treating him, I thought, very unfairly. He's an outstanding man. And I asked him, I said, do you want to go through this for 2 or 3 months, or would you want me to maybe do something else? And he thought about it. I said, it's going to be rough. I could see exactly where the press is going.
Critics had also been concerned that Mr. Ratcliffe would warp U.S. intelligence to support the president's views. I got more details from our Washington correspondent, Chris Buckler.
Well, in some ways, Emilio, it's as much about the position as it is about the man, because as you indicated there, this is supposed to be a nonpartisan role. And certainly the last director of national intelligence, Dan Coats, at times wasn't on the same page with the president. Certainly whenever he talked about Vladimir Putin and the threat from Russia in regards of them interfering in democracy here, even questions about North Korea, sometimes Dan Coats was this uncomfortable position of not always backing up what the president thought. But that is a key part of this position. Mr. Ratcliffe, on the other hand, was seen as a Trump loyalist and actually someone who was potentially going to be put into this position because Donald Trump believed in him. And actually, what had really brought him to the president's attention in recent weeks was the fact that he had been very aggressive in his questioning of Robert Mueller, the former special counsel, during a congressional hearing. And then there were those questions about his CV, whether or not he actually had the experience to oversee 17 civilian and military intelligence agencies.
So what seems to have changed Mr. Trump's mind? Obviously, we heard him there blaming the media. And then at some point in that appearance at the White House, he said something about how he uses the media to vet these nominees.
Yeah. Basically, he seemed to suggest that part of this whole process of nomination in which people are vetted, the media could play a part in that. So you could almost get the idea that the president had thrown out his name last week and basically waited for the media to come back with their full review of him. However, there's somebody else who's very important in that whole review, and that's the group of congressmen and senators who sit on these committees that ultimately confirm whether or not somebody gets a job. And at the moment, there are a number of Republicans as well as Democrats questioning whether or not this was the appropriate man for the appropriate job with the appropriate experience. And therefore, Mr. Trump also had to look at whether or not he was going to get it across the line. And as a result, he's now looking for somebody else.
Chris Buckler in Washington. The head of the Ebola response in the Democratic Republic of Congo says that only half of cases are currently being identified. Jean-Jacques Muembe warned that the epidemic could continue for another 2 to 3 years. The outbreak has become the second worst on record, killing more than 1,800 people since it was declared a year ago. Our West Africa correspondent Louise de Wast reports.
In the eastern Congolese city of Goma, it's a race against the clock to identify and locate all those who have been in contact with a gold miner who died from Ebola on Wednesday. Cases in the city on the border with Rwanda had prompted the World Health Organization to declare the outbreak as an emergency of international concern. Authorities say that the miner's wife and one of his children who tested positive are currently being treated and are in a stable condition. More than 200 of his contacts have been identified and offered a vaccine. But one of the worries is that one of his sisters fled to another province. And while she was eventually located, she is considered a contact and should not have been traveling. Meanwhile, researchers in neighboring Uganda are involving 800 people in the largest ever trial of another experimental Ebola vaccine.
Luiz Duast, the head of Brazil's Space Research Institute, has lost his job after a public row with President Jair Bolsonaro over the rate of deforestation in the Amazon. Ricardo Galvão accused the president of acting like a coward when he dismissed reports of deforestation in the Amazon as a lie. I asked our Brazil correspondent, Daniel Galás, how this dispute came about.
The government was somewhat surprised by very dramatic deforestation numbers that came out last month, suggesting there had been an 80% increase in deforestation. For some time, there was a trend of less deforestation in the Amazon, but then there's been this drastic change. These numbers are published by an institute, which is a pretty independent institute in the way it is being run, and these numbers come out all the time. But the president was angry that he did not learn about these numbers before they were released. So he started accusing the head of the agency of being part of a sort of an international conspiracy of foreign NGOs who Mr. Bolsonaro, the president, says are always trying to control the Amazon. And this angered the head of the institute, who called Mr. Bolsonaro a coward in the way he was attacking the institute. So today this crisis came to an end with the exiting of this head of the institute.
And as often happens in these cases, there's always a question as to who went first or who sacked who or resigned. Do we know if Ricardo Galvão was sacked or has he resigned?
It wasn't explicit, but it was pretty clear that he wouldn't be able to continue with his job because, in a way, he has a protected mandate of 4 years, so he couldn't be sacked. But there is a clause where if he loses the trust of the minister, if the minister loses trust in him, then he could be sacked. They didn't explicitly say what happened, but it's pretty clear that he was forced out of his job. Mr. Galvão is a highly respected scientist, and there's never been any doubt about the monitoring system of the Amazon and their accuracy in detecting deforestation. So the president is pretty much fighting with the whole of the scientific community in this instance.
Daniel Galás. A Swedish judge has ordered that U.S. rapper A$AP Rocky be released from custody in Sweden and allowed to leave the country while he awaits a verdict in his assault case. A$AP Rocky, whose real name is Rakim Mayers, was detained on July 3rd with two of his friends in connection with a street brawl. He was charged with assault, causing actual bodily harm. Maddie Savage has been following the trial in Stockholm.
There were loud cheers and a lot of clapping when the judge announced that decision that A$AP Rocky and the two other suspects on trial for an assault here in Stockholm around a month ago would not have to spend another night in the detention centre a few blocks from here where they've been held ever since their arrest. It is not the case that there's been a verdict. We will find out whether they've been found guilty or not guilty on the 14th of August. But certainly a lot of happiness from those close to A$AP Rocky. His mother was sobbing in the public gallery. And then as A$AP Rocky came to join his friends and family, there were huge hugs all around. Donald Trump has also reacted to the case as well. He has said that A$AP Rocky will soon be flying home to America. He said, "Come home soon, A$AP, ASAP." This is still an active case. It is an assault case, and the authorities here are taking it seriously. The judge going through different types of evidence that have been presented from both sides. The alleged victim's lawyer argues that he was attacked by A$AP Rocky and his crew outside a burger bar, that he was pushed to the ground and injured with a glass bottle. A$AP Rocky's team argue that although he did push the alleged victim to the ground, no bottles were used. They argue that he was acting acting in self-defense. He felt scared of the alleged victim and his friend. He thought that this teenage alleged victim was on drugs and that was why he acted. And during the trial, ASAP Rocky's team did a lot to talk about his celebrity status, how he's been attacked and robbed before, and that could be seen as an explanation for his behavior. But the alleged victim did sustain some serious injuries, and the judge will also be looking over documents from the hospital, photos and video footage that's been presented over this three-day trial.
Maddie Savage in Stockholm. Saudi Arabia has announced a new law that will allow women to travel abroad without a male guardian's permission, ending a restriction that has been a symbol of the kingdom's ultra-conservative rule. Saudi women over the age of 21 will now be able to apply for a passport, giving them the same travel rights as men. I spoke to Hanan Razek from BBC Arabic and asked her what difference the move would make.
Massive difference. You know, if someone would speak to me a few years ago about the possibility of this, the answer will probably be impossible, that it's going to happen. I don't think many Saudi women, even those who campaigned for it for years now, imagine that it will be for real. Now, Saudi women are given the freedom of movement, which will make a massive change for them. They can issue passports, they can travel without the permission of their male guardian. And this comes after a trend of the rise of the number of women, especially young women, fleeing their parents and their families. So if they have this freedom now, I think it would be very interesting to watch what's going to happen next to Saudi women.
Yes, because it also comes after women were given the right to drive and also to move around without a male chaperone. Mm. So what's the regime hoping to achieve with this?
I think the main drive for the regime to do this and to make these changes is economic. The crown prince, who's the de facto leader of the kingdom, in 2016, he announced a transformation plan for the economy, aiming to steer away from depending on oil revenues. He knows very well that it's a young population. More than 50% of the Saudis are under 35 years old. And he knows that he cannot do this without the workforce of women. And in order to do that, you have to give them some rights. You have to give them rights to drive. You have to give them rights to move freely, to take jobs, and to be able to help that economy to revive and steer away from oil.
And how have women reacted to this latest news?
It's very joyous. There is a lot of praising for the decision, especially on Twitter. Saudis are quite big on Twitter. They use it a lot. Women are very joyful. The third most trending hashtag today in Saudi Arabia, it's under the name, when are you going to travel? So Saudi women are already planning to travel and change their lives. However, there is also a lot or some criticism of the decision maker, because at the same time that women are now celebrating all those rights being given, there are women who were the ones who initiated and called for this change to happen are now in prison. People actually criticize Mohammed bin Salman that even though he's the one who is after all the changes, he also controversial when it comes to human rights and women rights record.
Hanan Razek of BBC Arabic. Our Beirut correspondent, Martin Patient, spoke to Sarah Hozayem, a young fashion designer in the kingdom. What did she think of the announcement?
It's really a good thing. We're glad we have news like that in Saudi Arabia, so we are so happy with that.
What difference will it make to you, though?
My freedom, like, even if I don't have, like, babies, so I think the women who have kids, they would be more happy with this good news.
The law may have changed, but the culture in Saudi Arabia remains very conservative. Do you think many women will travel on their own?
Yes, sure. But in some women, that doesn't change a thing. Like I have a good family, I have a good husband, I am a married woman. So otherwise, with this good news, I'm glad for the other women, because for me, it's okay to travel and go wherever I want, even before this news.
Although you needed to get your husband's permission, legally.
even though, like, with this new rules, like, I need to tell my husband that where I'm going or no. Like, it's something that it's a way that you respect your family and your husband.
Do you drive?
Yes, 2 weeks ago I got my license.
Things have changed a lot in the last year. How has it changed your life?
By the driving, which is like, it's easier for me if I want to do something on my own. Like, I don't have to wait for the driver or for the Uber or taxi or someone to pick me up. So I think it's easier in this way. But I mean, it's good that you have a driver and he takes you wherever you want. But sometimes you need to do something on your own.
Sarah Khuzayim speaking to Martin Patience. Still to come.
See him getting closer and closer to the ground. The wheels hit the ground, kind of wobbles a little bit. He was able to hit the brake to bring it to a stop.
The U.S. police officer who got a big shock when he spotted a plane on a busy road. A blood test which can detect the early onset of Alzheimer's has been developed by scientists in the United States. Researchers from Washington University's School of Medicine in Missouri found the test had more than 90% accuracy in spotting toxic proteins in the brain that can be an early indication of the disease. Dr. James Pickett is head of research at the Alzheimer's Society in the UK.
We are really excited about today's news. It's not the first time that we've been able to pick up these changes that occur before the symptoms of the disease. We have ways of doing that using things like scanners and neuroimaging and a procedure called a lumbar puncture. But the problem with these kind of approaches is either they're very expensive or they're not very accessible. People might have to travel 50 miles to get to a PET scanner, for example. So the attractiveness of a blood test, which could be made very available and accessible, and we know is actually quite acceptable to people as well, is a real step forward.
For more details about the blood test, I spoke to our health reporter, Philippa Roxby.
They've been using a blood test to find a protein called amyloid beta. And this is a very important protein in Alzheimer's disease because in the brain, large quantities of it can form into clumps, and that's what causes the damage, creating symptoms like memory loss and confusion that we all associate with dementia. So instead of looking for amyloid beta in the brain, they looked for it in the blood of 150 adults in this study. And they discovered that finding it in the blood was a very good and accurate way of predicting whether there was a lot of that protein in the brain. And as a result of that, they think they can use this to test drugs in clinical trials and try and find out if they apply them really early on before people develop the disease, whether they work or not.
But as there's no cure for Alzheimer's, detecting it early doesn't necessarily mean that people will be cured, does it?
That's right. Yeah, there's no cure and there's no treatment at all yet. All the drug trials so far have failed. But the way this helps is that they want to test more and more drugs on people very, very early on. So they know they've got a good likelihood of developing the disease, but they haven't yet got the symptoms. So if you have a blood test that predicts early signs of Alzheimer's, those people can be taken into clinical trials and drugs can be tested on them. So it's a very good way of improving our knowledge of the drugs that work on dementia.
And when will the blood test come into use?
It'll be a few years yet. It needs to be tested in larger studies on more people. And experts say it's a little bit too early to say it's conclusive. And it also isn't a conclusive test for dementia because we all have elements of amyloid beta, this protein in our brains, even healthy older people, so not just people with Alzheimer's. So it can't be a decisive test.
Philippa Roxby, a Ugandan academic, has been sentenced to 18 months in jail for posting comments on Facebook criticizing President Yoweri Museveni. Stella Nyanzi, who was convicted of cyber harassment, has been in detention since November. From Kampala, here's Patience Atuhaide.
Stella Nyanzi appeared by video link from prison. She refused to listen to the magistrate delivering the sentence, saying she had been brought to the session against her will. She then lifted her blouse and exposed her breasts. Stella Nyanzi was defiant throughout her trial. When the verdict was announced on Thursday, she refused to plead not to be sent to jail. She added that she would have loved to have been convicted of another charge, offensive communication, because she had intended to offend President Museveni. The magistrate described her Facebook post as obscene, lewd and disgusting. The former Makerere University lecturer is still facing charges for another Facebook post in which she called the president a pair of buttocks.
Patience Atuhaire, how much would you be prepared to pay for a cup of tea, or rather the tea leaves you boil up to make a cuppa? As much as $2,035 for a kilo? Well, that's the price that's just been paid for a rare tea from Assam in India called Mejan Orthodox Golden, a world record price at an Indian auction. But why did it cost so much, and does the taste justify the price? Julian Marshall spoke to James Pogson, the director of Northern Tea Merchants in the UK.
Different factors affect the value of tea. Flavour and the quality of the leaves is always the first thing, but the provenance and the exclusivity of it also affect the price significantly, which is why we're seeing the prices fetched at this auction that we have done.
And this particular tea, I understand only a limited amount was harvested.
That's correct. And it's a very, very good way of making sure that you can get the best possible price for your tea by producing just a small quantity. We see this in several other trades as well. It's done in coffee, and I've even seen it done with chocolate as well.
But what does this tea taste like? I mean, have you ever had any?
Well, I've bought tea from the Assam company for many years now. We have some of their very good quality Assam teas that go into my own blends. But these little exclusive lots, the thing is, in the UK, we're a bit peculiar because we've never run out of tea. We've always had lots of it. And we tend to drink 95% of the UK market is actually tea bags, black tea in tea bags, which aren't expensive. And the prices for those are driven by the supermarkets. But when you get to these lovely orthodox teas, orthodox, by the way, means a large leaf, a large wiry leaf that's rolled by hand, in this case, then you get release a whole different set of flavours. The fact that they've called it golden tip means that in the manufacture of the tea as well, they've picked it just at the right time, and it will be just as the buds are about to burst forth. And it takes a lot of good timing on the part of the planter and also a lot of skill on the part of the picker as well. It's what we would call a very generous pick.
Indeed. James Pogson. A pilot in the U.S. state of Washington managed to land his plane on a busy highway without hitting any cars after he lost control. David Aklam had to make an emergency landing after his light aircraft developed technical problems. As our correspondent Gary O'Donoghue reports, images of the moment have been broadcast around the world.
I was flying to work. My engine quit.
David Aklam's only option for a safe landing was the northbound lanes of Pacific Avenue in the city of Portland. Jason Pearsall was travelling south and saw the plane coming straight at him.
We had to dodge the plane, yes. As soon as we dodged, turned off the road, the plane touched down. The guy was all over the place, but he saved it. Like, he managed to not crash and everybody else or hit anybody else, so it was pretty cool.
By this time, police officer Clint Thompson had noticed the plane in trouble. He turned his car around, put on his flashing lights, and followed it until it landed on the highway, preventing other cars from piling up behind it. The plane came to a stop at the red light at 138th Street.
In 21 years, I would say that's the first time I've ever went across the radio and said there's a plane that landed on Pacific Avenue.
The video shows the police officer getting out of his car and knocking on the plane's cockpit, revealing a relieved and grateful David Aklam.
Probably saved me from either serious injury or death, and somebody else from getting in a car crash with the plane.
David Aklam says he may drive to work tomorrow.
No doubt he will. Gary O'Donoghue. And that's all from us for now, but there'll be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. And if you want to comment on this edition or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Emilio San Pedro. Until next time, goodbye.